This is The Bottom Line, a weekly segment looking at the state's business climate. I'm Catherine Welch, filling in for Dave Fallon. Joining me is Providence Business News editor Mark Murphy. Hello, Mark.
Hi there, Catherine.
This week, we focus on politics. Well, the September 9th primary is headed our way, and the five major candidates running for governor can't roll out their plans for fixing the state's economy fast enough. So Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay joins us at the intersection of politics and economics to discuss the role the state's dismal economy is playing in the campaign. Hello, Scott, and welcome to The Bottom Line.
Great to be here, Catherine.
Scott, quickly, outline the structural problems keeping Rhode Islanders from getting jobs.
Well, there's quite a few. One that I've studied a lot in recent years is the education and skill level of the Rhode Island workforce. Our state ranks near the bottom of the New England states in the percentage of adults who have at least a bachelor's degree. You know, only Maine, with its fishing and bed and breakfast economy, ranks lower. And even worse, Rhode Island ranks last in New England and below the national average in the percentage of our workforce 25 years and older that at least has graduated from high school. And we know this is not a 21st century workforce.
You know, Scott, it's interesting. What has not been happening a lot in this campaign, and I think it's a difficult thing politically to say, is that Rhode Island is not necessarily the captain of its own ship here. I mean, Rhode Island is really part of a larger regional economy. And so there's been a lot of positive things happening in Boston and in the generally in Massachusetts, but the Boston metro area. But a lot of those same kinds of things are not happening here in terms of startups, in terms of investment, in terms of private equity investment. I mean, the money that's flowing into Boston continues to grow, and it's just sort of sporadic here. Is there really something real that a governor here can do to deal with the regional economy?
I think a couple things that politicians always do. First of all, they take too much credit for good times, saying that they forged this thing. They tend to run away from bad times, blaming it on someone else, a national economy, try to distract people from what's going on. I do think I agree with you on one thing. It's very difficult for a state as small as Rhode Island, not even big enough to be a county anywhere west of the Hudson River, to really be the captain of its own ship. We are in a 21st century globalized, regionalized economy where no longer can somebody wave a magic wand at the State House and all of a sudden there's 10,000 jobs coming here? Those days are over, and clearly we are behind the eight ball compared to our New England competitors, Boston and Connecticut. I will say one thing, though, that I think people in Rhode Island tend to downplay. There's this kind of Massachusetts magic that people point to. It's largely confined to the Boston area. If you look at the unemployment rates in places like New Bedford, Haverhill, Fall River, Worcester, Springfield, Lowell, you'll find that those cities, frankly, a lot of them are doing worse than we are here in Rhode Island, and they tend to have the same problems we do. They tend to be old, low-skill manufacturing centers, places like textiles, jewelry, tanneries, and they really haven't found an economic fulcrum to take the place of some of those old industries that we know first went to the American South, and now they're in the third world.
So let's look at our current governor, Lincoln Chafee. Scott, what has been done and not done in the last 4 years under Chafee's administration to improve the state's economy?
Well, I think there have been some positive things, definitely. He has changed some of the emphasis on education, but I would say there have been no huge investments made in education to the extent that Massachusetts and Connecticut have years ago. We're behind the eight ball on that, too, particularly in higher education. He's had some good proposals. I think the engineering building and the program at URI will turn out to be a good thing. I think the nursing school in Providence downtown will turn out to be a good thing. I think his focus on workforce development's been good. I also think that linking CCRI, the Community College of Rhode Island, in tandem with Electric Boat is helping train more workers that are going to build those submarines. So there's been some glimmers of hope, but there's been nothing, no magic or silver bullets. In fairness to him, when he came to office, the unemployment rate was 11.4%. Now it's down to 7.7%, still not good enough.
You know, one of the things that we hear when we talk to businesses, and we talk to them all the time, is the need for consistent, clear, and simplified regulation. And Governor Chafee at one point sped up the process, the regulatory review process. But after that initial kind of charge that he put into the process, very little has been done. And I can tell you the business community is looking at that as being a major failing. I mean, you know, you really, you know, businesses, when you talk to them, they don't complain really. You know, when you talk about their real business, they don't complain a lot about taxes. They don't complain about the high cost of electricity. They don't complain about the high cost of land as much as they do the difficulty in getting permitting done, in understanding what the nature of it is, in the labyrinth bureaucracy that exists in Rhode Island between state and local governments. And that really is something the governor has dropped the ball on.
This is The Bottom Line here on Rhode Island Public Radio. So let's pivot from the current governor to those who want to succeed him. Scott, what are you hearing from the Democrats and Republicans about how they would improve the economy?
Well, there's some slightly different looks at this. They mostly break down into the philosophy of the two parties. The Democrats talk about doing a better job marketing tourism. They talk about trying to get better job training going, putting more money into education, focusing on some of those ideas. They all have different ideas, little permutations one way or another, but they aren't dramatically different. On the Republican side, when you look at that primary, Ken Block and Alan Fung, there's a lot more emphasis on cutting government spending, cutting state regulations that Mark was just talking about, and frankly, cutting taxes. They think the tax burden's too high on business. So you have a pretty much left-right Republican-Democratic difference, the usual thing we have in this discussion.
Yeah, I'd like to know from the Republicans just exactly how it is they're going to enact anything, you know, that changes the business climate. I mean, they're going to be running, you know, up against clearly a very strongly Democratic legislature. Now, the current speaker, Mattiello, is a much more conservative than I think Gordon Fox was.
He is.
So there'll be a little bit more agreement, but I still think the rank and file are not necessarily going to, you know, fall in line that easily. Right?
It's difficult. One of the problems with regulations, and all the business people complain about it, but the push comes to shove when you talk about things like DEM. And they don't like the environmental regulations, but boy, there's a huge constituency in this state that says, no, we are not, and when it comes to just a trade-off, straight trade-off, jobs in the environment, we're not doing that. We are not going back to the bad old days when a business could employ thousands of people, but they polluted the bay and made it an open sewer. We're not going back there.
So, Scott, in these final days of this primary, what should voters listen for or research as they pick a candidate?
I think voters should look at specifics. It really drives me crazy, and I'm sure it drives Mark and some of your business constituents crazy when people talk pie in the sky. We're going to do this. We're going to have this program. We're going to build these roads. We're going to fix this bridge. We're going to build this, do that. And they don't tell you how they're going to pay for it. That really frosts me. As reporters, we always try to get those answers. You know, we try hard, but politicians are very good at dancing around these things.
Yeah, I think that's really the hard part here. I mean, if someone were to propose radically that from now on, all transportation-related revenue, the gas tax, was only going to pay for infrastructure projects. Boy, we'd have a lot of projects, but that would also take a lot of money out of the general fund. So that would cause the real discussion about the rest of, you know, spending by the state. But that's really a serious discussion. And right now, all I hear is stuff talked about on the margins. You know, you're really not getting into the, you know, sort of the meat of the problem.
And look how hard it is. Look at something like the Saconic River Bridge. They fought about that for years. And finally, when people didn't want to pay a toll there, they had to raise the gas tax. So we have this argument in Rhode Island, it seems, forever.
All right. Scott McKay, Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Thank you, Catherine.
And Mark Murphy, editor of the Providence Business News. Thanks, as always.
It was fun, as always.
I'm Catherine Welch, and this is The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio, Rhode Island's NPR.
Support for The Bottom Line comes from Bank RI, a local bank creating financial solutions to help small businesses grow and succeed. More at bankri.com.